This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. 60 years ago, during the holidays, the German army tried to push the Allies back one last time. The Second World War was nearing its end in Europe. Earlier in 1944, the Allied army fought its way ashore at Normandy. But in December, German leader Adolf Hitler surprised the Allies with an offensive across Belgium and Luxembourg. By Christmas Eve, German forces had pushed the American defense line back 60 miles and trapped the 101st Airborne Division at Bastogne.
This punch was the bulge of the Battle of the Bulge, Hitler's plan to reach the Meuse River, move north, and capture the port of Antwerp, then offer terms for an armistice. The Germans never reached the Meuse.
Commentator and former CBS TV anchorman Walter Cronkite was with George Patton's Third Army that Christmas and covered the American counteroffensive for the wire service then known as United Press. Today he reflects on what is generally regarded as the largest pitched battle in the history of American arms.
We had reason to expect a merry Christmas. The word merry, of course, is always a relative term in wartime. But this was Christmas 1944. And things were finally going well. A year before, there hadn't even been a Western Front in Europe. Now the Allies were massing along the German frontier from Belgium to Switzerland. Senior commanders from General Omar Bradley on down were telling reporters one thing. The Germans could not mount a major winter offensive. When one correspondent asked about the thin American line through the Ardennes region of Belgium and Luxembourg, he was told, well, that was just a calculated risk of war. In the dead of winter, it seemed a reasonable risk, but it was wrong.
A great battle of movement is raging tonight in Belgium and Luxembourg. Front dispatches say the Germans are attacking all along the front, looking for weak spots in the American line. The enemy seems to be adequately prepared.
I was about 75 miles to the east when the attack began at dawn on Saturday. It was sometime after midnight on Sunday the 17th when I learned what was happening. The news came with a bang on my door in the dead of night. It was Jack Fleischer, a United Press colleague from the First Army. He scribbled out a dispatch, asked me to send it on to our office in Paris, and then left. I got dressed, hopped into a jeep, and drove across Belgium on roads clogged already with retreating soldiers and panic-stricken refugees. I reached Luxembourg City that morning, just below what would become the southern shoulder of the German push. During the early days of the Bulge, there was little to do but watch. A complete news blackout on all ground activity was added to normal censorship.
From Supreme Headquarters announcements and from news dispatches sent from Europe tonight, it is not possible to gauge accurately the situation on the Western Front. It's safe to say the Nazi offensive has been slowed, but since official news is 2 days late in arriving here, it's impossible to give the up-to-the-minute picture. However, at last reports, the Germans were rolling toward the Sedan gateway to France at a 15-mile-a-day clip. As of noon Thursday, the Germans had moved 15 miles west of Bastogne, 40 miles inside Belgium. Today there have been no dispatches from the front lines, an indication the 48-hour restriction has been extended to correspondents sending news from the front.
With communications fogging the larger picture, what would become the great drama of Bastogne was still unclear. So reporters looked for stories close at hand. I'd heard rumors that a number of English-speaking Germans had been dropped behind our lines. Dressed as American soldiers, they were there to confuse and confound. I was not a broadcast correspondent, but broadcasters often picked up United Press stories.
Meanwhile, three German parachute spies dressed in American uniforms are revealed to have been captured and executed behind American lines. United Press correspondent Walter Cronkite says the spy scare has gripped the capital of Paris as well. He says officials are warning that a fifth column may be attempting to rise from the sewers of Paris.
What I didn't say was that General Eisenhower also was in Paris. For several days, the fear of an assassination plot made him a virtual POW in his own army. His security was so tight, he was effectively cut off from the developing battle. But a strategy already had been laid during a secret meeting at Verdun on the 19th. There, Eisenhower, Bradley and George Patton had settled on a plan. Now it was Saturday, December 23rd.
We delay the start of our scheduled program to bring you this bulletin from CBS World News. Richard C. Hotlett, Columbia's correspondent with the American First Army, has just reported that there are indications that at some points the tide of battle is beginning to change in our favor. He said one German spearhead had been pushed back some distance by a veteran American division.
Vague as Hotlett's report was, the turn came none too soon. For 8 days, the German advance had been protected by a cover of thick fog and low clouds that became a shield against Allied air attack. Then, on the 23rd, a sub-zero cold front turned mud into rock. One of the first eyewitness reports was broadcast by Dick Hotlett.
It's icy cold on the front tonight, and the mud on the roads and in the fields is frozen hard in wrinkles and folds. And the tire marks of trucks and jeeps and tanks that have been rolling forward are now hardened into regular corrugated pattern. The men, digging new positions in the fields, have had to chop at the ground with their shovels and use axes. Out in the forward position, men are lying in holes, beating their hands together, stamping their feet to get warm.
By the eighth day, German forces had penetrated many miles into Belgium, and 60,000 of them laid a ring of fire around a small but crucial rail and highway hub called Bastogne. The 101st Airborne had beaten the Germans to the town and captured it. Their instructions were to hold the vital crossroads at all costs, and now they were surrounded. For most Americans, the siege of Bastogne became the great drama of the Battle of the Bulge. On December 22nd, Heinrich Luttwitz sent the American commander his demand that the surrounded Yanks surrender. Brigadier General Anthony McAuliffe shot back a one-word answer that shall live in the annals of American military history. To the German general's demand, he answered, "Nuts." As McAuliffe provided the bravado, Patton was about to administer the muscle. On the 23rd, everything seemed to turn at once. As temperatures dropped, clouds parted over the Ardennes. I was visiting a 9th Air Force control point when a patrol of Thunderbolts first spotted a break in the clouds. The radio traffic was electrifying as pilots began ripping into German ground operations with a vengeance. In short order, it seemed as if every American attack plane in Europe was joyriding over the Ardennes, plastering any German columns that moved. On Christmas Eve, newspapers gave the home front a great gift as 5,000 Allied planes smashed the German advance.
Allied Supreme Headquarters also reveals that thousands of American and British bombers are attacking the German supply columns and lines of communication. As a matter of fact,
with the American news blackout still in effect, the first news that Patton was on the loose came from German radio. Three divisions of the Third Army had wheeled and were charging toward Bastogne.
As the fury of Allied air power was unleashed, Berlin reported that General Patton's Third Army tanks have opened a great counterblow against the south flank of the 50-mile breakthrough area.
Patton was on a tear of deliverance that would split the German south flank. The day after Christmas, his first units burst into Bastogne and linked up with the 101st. I was with a forward tank battalion when I learned that news. Major General Maxwell Taylor, the commander of the 101st, had been in consultation in Washington when the German offensive began. He flew back to Europe only to find his troops surrounded. From a forward tank position from which I happened to be reporting, he ordered up a jeep to try to rejoin his men. I had dropped with the 101st in the Netherlands, and now, climbing into his jeep, he invited me to come along to Bastogne. I was tempted. It would have been a prize indeed to be the first reporter to reach those surrounded troops. But with no lines of communication, I could never have filed a timely story. Caught between opportunity and survival, I found that a convenient excuse. It seemed like a suicidal trip. Meanwhile, Supreme Headquarters was spreading the news. 3 days after Christmas, Americans learned that the siege had been broken and that a legend was about to be born.
General Patton's Third Army has gone to the rescue. That dramatic announcement comes from Supreme Headquarters late this afternoon. The lifting of the siege has cut the back of the German salient in Belgium to less than 20 miles. American troops under Patton's command, attacking on a 35-mile front from Bastogne to the German border, have gained 16 miles in the past 6 days. A frontline dispatch says the lightning drive north from the Saar appears to have broken the back of the German winter offensive.
Relief of Bastogne made a hero of Patton. It was the great turning point of the Bulge, effectively the end of any German hope of success on the Western Front. By the end of January, the entire penetration had been erased. So had 20 German divisions, 1,000 Nazi planes, 1,500 shattered tanks, and thousands of artillery pieces, none of which would ever fire a shot at an American soldier destined to cross the Rhine into the heart of Germany 3 months later. Of course, there was heavy fighting ahead, but the last great German offensive was history. The heroic events of that Christmas still mingle in my memory with the frigid air, the crunching snow, makeshift Christmas trees, and carols echoing from tinny loudspeakers. Many soldiers heard those songs on the big Christmas Day show on Armed Forces Radio. Command performance with Bob Hope.
Christmas 1944. Once again, America is singing the carols of Christmas, and Command performance brings you home for the carols you've always loved.
Memory often plays games when facts and emotion collide, but if the sound of Christmas music seems to lend a false sentimentality to the savagery of a horrible battle, it's not because either the sentimentality or the savagery is dishonest or untrue. It was all wrapped up in a genuinely heroic story, that Christmas of 1944. And we reporters were the storytellers. We were a privileged lot. If history can make our past understandable, it often takes a measure of nostalgia to make it endurable. This is because optimism breeds more rapidly than sorrow in our collective memory. If it were otherwise, it simply might be too difficult to go on. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.
Photos of the Battle of the Bulge and more essays by Walter Cronkite are at npr.org. It's All Things Considered.